Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Hi guys, welcome back to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. I'm Rick Ingram. I don't know if you figured that part out yet, but this is what, episode 13, 14? We got to be getting at least into double digits. But yeah, welcome back. Thank you for listening. Tonight we got Mike. I'm going to butcher this.
Yeah, I bet.
Postolakis.
Okay, that's pretty
Postolakis.
Close. Postolakis, yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
But you can call me Post. It's much easier.
Mike Post. Way more American sounding.
Yeah, I mean, that's even too many words. You can just do Post.
Well, thank you for being here, Post. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
You're Greek, I assume?
Yeah, very Greek.
Very Greek. Very is that Greek mom and dad?
No, but like I look nothing like my mom. So
we just don't count her.
Yeah, we don't count her. She must have just passed nothing down.
I've noticed, Sarah, I've noticed our, this has got to be second or third Greek person we've had on the podcast. The Greek people, they know they've got a story to tell. That's what I'm learning from that.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like my mom is Hungarian and Polish, and the Polish side is like dead quiet. I mean, these people don't have any emotion whatsoever.
Nice.
They like last time I went down to visit like immediate family or extended family, I was with my mom and my uncle and aunt and her brother and sister, and they were talking about all these things they found in my grandmother's house, right? Photographs.
Anything good?
Birth certificates.
Creepy.
Well, they talked about the boring stuff for about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then my mom was like, well, we got to go. And at the very end, my uncle goes, oh, by the way, I found the article that references great-grandpa killing someone. Yeah. And I was like, you made me sit here for an hour
and
a half.
Keep that under wraps.
Yeah, I was like falling asleep half the time. And I was like, now we're leaving. And I learned that my great-great-grandfather... maybe he shot and killed someone.
Now, is this, what's that, like 100 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
So now, is this a good old-fashioned murder, or are we talking about self-defense?
I think it might have been, it sounds like it might have been, he probably owed someone money.
Okay.
Or gambled or something, because I think he did it in another state, and that's how we ended up in Ohio.
They went to Ohio on the lam.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be really funny if this got somehow, like, forensic and like,
yeah,
just completely fucked my family over just to come over on a podcast.
Someone who is a part of this could be the new McCoys, and they'll track you down. You'll pay the debt owed.
Like, there's like some podcast in Pennsylvania that tries to solve murders, and this is the one. They're like,
we finally got a lead after all this time. So wait, it started owed money in Pennsylvania, and they were like, as long as we get to Ohio, no one can find us.
Yeah, exactly.
What part of Ohio did they decide to go to?
They went like east side, Youngstown. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, I'm familiar.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. In like Steubenville, you know that? That was like a real corrupt town.
I know Youngstown had a pretty high crime rate about 10 years ago. And that's really all I know about it.
Yeah, that area used to be, like Steubenville specifically, they used to call Little Chicago because it was a meeting station between the mobs of New York and Chicago.
Right.
So they would all meet there, and they owned half the town. And
smart.
Yeah.
You got to buy in if you're going to run it.
Yeah, but they've been corrupt towns from the dawn, and they still are.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio is one of those places where people will try and convince you that there's some nice places in there, but I'm not buying it.
No. Cincinnati's trash.
Yeah,
Cleveland's
Cincinnati's
poor.
Just Kentucky.
Not
kid ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
There's like three neighborhoods in the whole city of Cincinnati that are okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Cleveland's poor, and like all the outliers are just, you know, opioid addicted cousins, you know, you don't want to talk to.
I had a lot of people try and convince me at one point that Columbus was a really great city. And I'm pretty sure that's close to Youngstown.
Sort of, yeah, but that's where I'm from.
You're from Columbus?
Yeah.
Now, do you think it's great?
No, not really. It had a moment. You know, the Ohio State campus is there, and it used to be a really kind of, because the university is huge, but it used to have like a really cool kind of campus with like a lot of dive bars. And when I was in high school, we used to go down there and drink because, you know, they didn't check anything.
Right.
But they've completely tore all those places out. We used to have a lot of great clubs.
Gentrified it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a mall.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the people who loved Columbus were always telling me about how great the Columbus music scene was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
And I would always joke about, just like, they'd be like, you should check it out if you can. I'm like, I'm not going to Columbus to see a bunch of local Columbus bands.
Yeah, right. But Dayton's the better one. Dayton has, like, Guided by Voices and The Breeders and bands like that.
Oh, they have. Oh, I was like, Dayton's a better. I've been to Dayton before, and it was a little bit like Walking Dead at night.
Mm-hmm.
When you'd go out, you're just like, oh, my God. Like, that was the first city I'd been to where there was a staggering amount of homeless people.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kind of creeping around.
Yeah, it's like almost as many as here.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, this was early 2000s, there was more homeless people there than I saw here. and I was with Paulie Shore. I don't want to brag.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
I remember him being like, dude, you got to be careful because a lot of these people are going to recognize me. And I'm like, the homeless people of Dayton? And he genuinely seemed a little upset that no one.
Oh, I was going to say, mate, that would make sense.
Yeah, no, he'd be like, dude, we can't help you. And the guy would just kind of stagger away. And I'd be like, dude, you got him.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
It would have been great if Dayton homeless people just loved Pauly Shore. Like, they were the French to his Jerry Lewis.
It would have been nice. He also was very upset while we were there because the club owner, it was a club called Wiley's or something, he said there might not be great attendance on Saturday night because REO Speedwagon is playing at the free air show.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, oh, we're screwed. And he's like, dude, I don't got the same crowd as REO Speedwagon. And then sure enough, there was like 12 people at our show. Because it's 100% the same crowd as Speedwagon.
Yeah, that's a good way to find out. You have the same crowd as REO Speedwagon.
I should just be doing state fairs now? Yeah, that's probably the best plan.
I've seen a lot of good shows at the state fair.
Is that true?
Yeah, I have.
What's the best state fair show you've ever seen? I saw Bad Company and Styx.
Not a big Styx fan, but Bad Company, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, they were good.
You know what? The Spin Doctors.
That's a good state fair band.
Yeah, that was the best one. And it was not far removed from when they were not playing the state fair.
Right. Like, so this is late 90s?
Yeah, I think it was like mid. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess mid 90s would probably make more sense. Last I heard, the Spin Doctors couldn't even sing anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, listen, I hate to be the one to break the news to all the Spin Doctor fans out there listening. Maybe it's better. You know, it's probably, now that I think about it, it's probably been 17 years since someone told me that information about the Spin Doctors. I don't get the Spin Doctors news like I used to. Now, you're a restaurant guide writer. What does that mean?
I wrote a restaurant guide for Los Angeles. It's called LA by Mouth. Came out 2019 by W.W. Norton.
Okay.
So it just covers all like the restaurant stuff, but it's like supposed to be kind of funny, but as funny as that kind of writing can get.
So it's you're reviewing restaurants in a humorous way.
Yeah. Although the first draft was, I think, legitimately funny, but that's about 40% what got published.
Yeah, then they started taking stuff out.
Yeah, they took a lot
out.
Was
it restaurants complaining about?
No, they wouldn't know. It was the editor for the publisher.
He
started
taking.
Yeah, because I never wrote about food. I got this, like, it kind of fell into my lap.
Okay.
And
as it tends to do.
Sure, yeah. And I was like, oh, I can do that. And I had a year to do it, and I put it off till 2 weeks before
Smart.
The deadline.
So pressure is going to make everything better, I've always said.
So I wrote it in, like, a not even a studio. You know what a bachelor apartment is?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, like, it's big as this room.
Yeah.
I wrote it with no air conditioning in the hottest 2 weeks of August, and I just wrote a whole book.
Okay.
And I think it turned out.
Yeah, I mean, for the circumstances, that sounds, the fact that you were able to finish.
Yeah, but I had written this, like, whole, I was writing a novel, basically.
About and, restaurants.
Yeah, and I was like, I had this whole arc about
I love
a girlfriend. Yeah, like, I had a girlfriend who I didn't take to the restaurants and stuff. Like, in every review, I was like, boy, she would have loved this, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And I wrote, and it's like literally has like a three act structure. And when the publisher got it, they were like, what the hell is this? And I was like, well, there are some reviews. I'm like, you know, the hot dog at Carney's is good. And they're like, well, can you just put that in?
Can you focus?
Can we just maybe trim down? But, you know, some of it I got to keep. I got to keep when I met Jay Leno at Carney's.
Okay.
He loves it.
Jay Leno does?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't surprise me, I guess. I could say, which Carney's did you go to? This
the one? Yeah, the one right here.
Right down the street?
Yeah.
I wonder what Jay Leno was doing.
He's probably coming here.
His planner's just going to Carney's? Because he doesn't
He might
here.
Just be. He probably definitely a guy who's like, I'm just going to go to Carney's.
That's such a good impression.
Oh,
that's
really? Exactly. Thanks.
That's
well,
what
because
my Jay Leno sounds like.
Because I heard it like as close as me to you, because he sat there and I was staring at him and he was scarfing down these chili dogs.
Hilarious.
And look, I was more amazed of like, he was wearing denim, you know, like we always, and I was like, you are who you like, you're on my TV like this.
Yeah.
And you're also in Carney's.
Right. Honestly.
It's like weird when I saw, like, remember when Johnny Depp was in trouble and there was those secret videos and it's like, it's him around the house and he's super drunk and he's like chugging wine.
Yeah.
But the thing I was amazed with was like, oh, he dresses like Johnny Depp all the time.
Yeah.
That's a morning, man. That's like, you got to find all those ringlets and stuff.
I saw Slash in a doctor's office in Beverly Hills at like 7:30 in the morning, fully Slash. I'm not joking. Hat, sunglasses.
The top hat?
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Elevator doors opened up, and I'm like, it's Slash as Slash.
Oh, I love that.
And he just quietly moseyed off the elevator and just walked off. I'm just like, I remember looking at my...
No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I looked at my wife, like, and she was like, I can't believe he's dressed like Slash. I'm like, I know. Who dresses as himself?
I was just going to ask, do you think he had stayed up all night or if he had woken up at...
You know what? It's hard to say. I honestly want to say it was between 7:30 and 8:30 in the morning. So, I don't know. The only thing in the building are doctor's offices and lawyer's offices. So, I suppose he could have been going to either. But my guess is like he wants to go before the general public get there, and then the elevator doors open and an asshole like me is just standing there looking at him like, it's fucking Slash. And he's probably just like, God damn it. But he really did look super fucking cool.
Yeah,
I'm just like, I've never looked that cool at 7:30 in the morning in my entire life. I'm fully ready to go. If he didn't stay up all night, then he woke up at like 4:30 to get Rockstar ready.
Yeah.
Which really, I'm hoping it's not the case. I want him to be up partying. I don't even remember how long ago it was, but I'm hoping that he, you know, it was like Scott Weiland's last night alive.
Ooh, yeah.
You just want something special like that. I don't know. Johnny Depp has to always be in full Johnny Depp mode at this point. He's just so weird.
Yeah.
I had an uncle visit me one time from Buffalo, and he's like, he had never been to LA, and we're kind of, I'm driving him around, showing him stuff, and he's like, you ever see Johnny Depp? I'm like, no. He's like, I bet he's weird. I'm like, yeah, probably. I don't know. I just love that he thought for sure, like, yeah, I bet Rick's hanging out with him.
Yeah.
There's no way he's not. Do you write Yelp reviews? Are you a Yelp reviewer?
No, definitely not.
I would like to think that somewhere there's someone who spends way too much time writing Yelp reviews, furious that you got a published
book
that's just like, I've literally been practicing every day.
Well, that's what I thought when they offered it to me. I was like a 60-second like Google. You could find someone you know who would want to do this. And but, you know, the money was good, so that's why I did it. And I ate a lot, spent all that money, eventually moved out of that bachelor apartment.
Got out of the bachelor.
Yeah, I got out. It was bittersweet.
Where was the bachelor apartment?
It was on, I've lived in the same building twice. It's on Vermont and Los Feliz, across from the Dresden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad. If you're going to have a bachelor, you might as well be there.
Yeah, not a bad area.
And where are you from? You're from Columbus, you said?
Yeah.
You grew up there?
I did, and then I moved to New Orleans at some point, and then I came here about 15 years ago.
What made you move to New Orleans? What was the
went plan to film there? School down there?
Nice. What Tulane? Where were you at?
No, University of New Orleans. Not a great school.
Listen, I honestly thought growing up that only worthwhile places would have film schools.
Yeah.
And then I went to two of the shittiest film schools of all time.
Which ones?
I went to one called College of Santa Fe.
Okay. Yeah.
In New Mexico that no longer exists. It was so bad. Only college I've ever heard of collapsing completely. But the joke is, now, if you didn't graduate from College of Santa Fe, you just graduated from the College of Santa Fe, because there's no way for anyone to check.
Yeah.
And then I went to University of Kansas Film School, which obviously you can just tell by,
sure, yeah,
you know, the film industry in Kansas that, yeah, this is the way you want to do things.
Yeah, mine wasn't great either. But I did you get the, did you have the book that was like the 50 best film schools? Did you ever have that book?
I had a bunch of.
I don't. I gotta be say I don't remember seeing University of Kansas. In
no,
there, but
I used to say it's like going to film school. University of Kansas was like studying African American culture at University of the Klan, because it didn't make sense. The film school was so just kind of thrown together that. It was like one of the only buildings that wasn't even on campus. It was just like in this shitty building. It looked like there should be like pharmaceutical testing done mm-hmm. there. And it was a good 5-6 minutes off campus. And they're like, that's the film school building. You're like, oh, that seems disappointing. And then I didn't stay long enough. I was there for like a year and a half, almost 2 years. And I never even saw a camera or anything.
Wow, really?
It's just basically some bullshit film history. How many times can we show you Citizen Kane?
Sure, and, yeah. They had one tape?
Yeah.
Is what you're saying?
It was over and over. Like, I know we talked about it yesterday because of Zooming, but what about Shadows? You know, oh, God.
Yeah, ours was bad. It was built on, like, an old airfield, so it had a weird, like, look to it. It was just flat, and New Orleans is extremely hot and rains all the time.
Very humid.
Yeah, I was either going to go to the University of Texas at Austin or that one. And I was watching Wild on E, and New Orleans looked like a lot of fun. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go there.
It.
Yeah.
Well,
and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was
I can imagine time. It being a good time, especially college age. Did you ever, drink alcohol while you were?
Yeah. A couple times. Yeah.
A few times.
Actually, to the point, like, it's not a bit. I'm not exactly sure what years I lived in New Orleans.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's
I know I moved right it. Before Katrina.
Oh, okay. You moved out of there or you moved to
I moved
there?
Out, yeah.
So you got out and you moved to L.A.?
Yeah.
And did you finish film school first?
Yeah, I had finished and then I stuck around for like 2 years, and I think. And just partied.
I love the vagueness of that. It's like,
it was crazy, man. It's like when you're in your early 20s and you move to a city where that never shuts down. Yeah, it's like anything you want to do, you can do there. And I did, and it was fun. But I don't... It's crazy.
Yeah. Some of the best memories you no longer have.
Exactly.
Were
right.
in the great city of New Orleans. So then you moved to L.A. What was the plan? You're going to come out here, next Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah, probably. Movies. Sort of like that. Aim low. And no, I just came out here to do comedy and make films and have done a little of both. But and then write a restaurant guide.
Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
What was the best restaurant experience you had while writing the book?
What neighborhood do you live in?
I live way west of here, so I live out towards like Thousand Oaks area.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I went
out there
much. I lived
in Sherman Oaks for a long time, though.
There was a place called Squirrel in, I guess you would say... Los Feliz. It's kind of in a weird half.
It's just called Squirrel.
Yeah.
Okay.
SQRL, I think.
All right.
And I forget the chef's name. Her name is, I think, Jessica something. I can't remember the last name, but she's terrific. And it was new. It was like it opened right when I started writing the book or whatever, started researching. And so it actually kind of felt like, oh, I know what I'm talking about because I'm hanging out here. But it was also like a block away. So,
right.
You know.
That works out well.
Yeah. So probably that place, because it still is a fantastic like breakfast joint.
That's it. So Squirrel is known for the breakfast. Okay.
Yeah. She makes like, she got famous making jam.
Yeah.
And then opened up her own place.
See, as a diabetic, I find that extremely offensive.
Oh, okay.
Just in general, jam and its deliciousness. And
one or two?
I'm type one.
Type one.
Yeah, I thought you meant jams for a second. I'm like, there's two types of jam? I'm a type one diabetic, yeah.
Gotcha.
And so I, you know, no matter what, if I ate jam, I would have to give myself another shot.
I know nothing about diabetes.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
Type one, basically means it's like autoimmune, and mm-hmm. so your body just starts attacking part of your pancreas. That's it's technically called the islets of Langerhans,
okay.
and that's the part of your pancreas that produces insulin. And so your body just starts attacking it until eventually your pancreas stops producing insulin.
Okay.
And it usually happens when you're like a kid, a bit younger. Mine started in my 20s, and I didn't find out for several years until I was very sick. And then type 2 is used. There's kind of two different types of type 2. One of them is your pancreas stops producing insulin slowly over time.
Mm-hmm.
And that will happen, like a lot of old people get it, and it's just basically your body doesn't run as well as it used to.
Gotcha.
And there's also your body becomes insulin resistant, where your body produces the right amount of insulin, but it just doesn't, your body doesn't process it the way you need to. And a lot of times that can be from overeating or eating too much sugar, drinking
right.
5 Mountain Dews a day every day.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I had a friend.
The American way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's just a good time. So the first one you're born with, right?
Yeah.
And the second one gets developed, and it's like new, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It hasn't always been with us.
I'm sure it has, but it wasn't recognized really until the last probably 30, 40 years, something
gotcha.
Like that. I don't think they realized there were different types of diabetes. It was just... You either got sick or you didn't.
Gotcha.
So I didn't find out till I was in my 20s. And so I went to a bunch of doctors for years who just kept telling me I had the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I was seemingly too old to suddenly have type 1. And I was very skinny, so no one assumed I had type 2.
Right.
And then eventually my blood sugar just got so bad that I basically went into diabetic shock and spent a week at the ICU in Burbank.
Oh, man.
It was a dream come true.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like it.
I was a violent projectile vomiter for a couple years. When people would be like, how often do you throw up? And I'd be like, oh, a few times a week. And they'd be like... And so, you know, you just do it. I didn't have any idea what was going on. So I went to the SAG health clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, you need to go see a gastrointestinologist. And I'm like, all right. And that's when I first found out that general practitioners don't have a fucking clue what they're talking about.
Sure, yeah.
And there's someone who basically barely passed medical school, and their job is to be a human version of Google your what your ailment is, and we will try and steer you in the right direction. So he sent me to a doctor who in no way helped me. And no offense to you, but he was a Greek doctor.
Oh man, and I would have walked right out.
Yeah,
yeah. We're not doctors. We're not doctors.
I know now.
We're not lawyers. We're
great people, not doctors. Apparently.
Yeah, we own a diner. Like, go to the diner.
I'm down with that.
We send you to the doctor.
What was great about him was I went. He was highly recommended. I like Googled him. It's like, this is one of the best gastrointestinologists in Los Angeles. I'm like, great. So I go to him, and he sits me down, and he goes through all my stuff with me. I'm there for like 2 hours, and he's like, I think you have intestinal migraines. And I'm like, whoa, I've never even heard of that. And so he basically gave it to me. He's like, it's very similar to migraines in your head, only it affects your stomach, and it can cause stomach spasms, and that's part of why you're throwing up so much. And I'm like, wow. And then I went home, and I Googled it just so I could learn some more, and the first thing that popped up was like, most experts believe this is not a real disease. I'm just like, does this guy not know I can Google that he's full of shit? And he basically just gave me a bunch of, what's it called? He gave me heartburn medication to take. And then it just made my body even sicker. So, and then after I found out I was diabetic, I wanted to look him up to like see what tests he had run on me.
Mm-hmm.
And his office was like, he is no longer practicing.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense, I guess.
I got a DUI about 12 years ago.
Nice.
Something.
Tell us
thank
more.
You. Well, but I had a terrible lawyer who was recommended from a family friend. And he was terrible. And I would like go every couple years, like Google him. And I would see like he'd been disbarred briefly.
Nice.
And then he got like his license back and he got disbarred again. I was like, I don't know why I'm looking at this information. It's not doing anything for me.
Yeah.
But it does like feel good. Yeah, yeah, it feels good.
So I was right. I did get screwed.
You were bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a buddy who I think he got when we were maybe it was either senior year of high school or freshman year of college. He got caught with weed in Kansas.
Mm.
And so that was a big deal. And he was on probation for like 3 years or something. And so they would randomly drug test him. And one day they called him. They said, you have to be drug tested tomorrow. And that was the deal. They'd give you 24-hour notice. And he had done cocaine. And so he went and did his drug test. He opted to not try and come up with some typical like, oh, I can't be there or whatever it was. So he just went and took the test and tested positive. And he was trying to keep it all secret from his family.
Mm-hmm.
And so the court sent a letter to his house stating that he had tested positive for cocaine and violated his probation.
Mm-hmm.
And so his parents, they just hired him a lawyer, and they got him a decent lawyer. And so the lawyer went back to court and was like, look, this is what happened. And he thought he was snorting Adderall. He didn't realize it was cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And because of his relationship with the judge, they took a year off his probation. And that was his punishment for... He just didn't get drug tested. I'm just like, wait, that's it? If you just get a good lawyer,
yeah.
you can do worse things and get less time.
Mm-hmm.
But should have gotten the DUI lawyer because it sounds like this guy set you up on the right path.
Well, no, he's trying to scam me. I had to pay like X amount of dollars. And so then he would like research the case. And then he would act like your best friend. And then as the got closer to the case, he would stop responding to emails or calls. And then on the day I'm supposed to show up, I think I'm remembering this right, but he basically was like, you're going to plead guilty, or if you want me to fight it, it's an extra X amount of dollars.
Right.
Which I had no idea was coming.
That's nice.
So yeah.
You just have to...
And you have to make that decision like, you know...
Right then, yeah.
Right then, so...
What were the circumstances that led to the DUI? Was it at least like a great night of partying?
Oh, it was a fantastic night. My friend owned a bar in the Valley. It was called Bar One. I forget what road it was on, but it was a great place. And I used to host a Life Day party. Do you know, are you a Star Wars guy?
I'm not.
Neither am I. I hate it. And they put out in the 70s a really terrible holiday film or something.
Okay.
That it aired once on ABC and George Lucas was like, Jesus Christ, and he like pulled it and banned it from ever being played again. And speaking of cocaine, I mean, like, half the cast is clearly high, and Jefferson Starship's in it and B. Arthur. It's like, it's fucking bizarre. So we used to host like just a holiday party where we'd watch it and yell at it and,
nice,
you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
Listen, anything with Bea Arthur is good in my book.
Oh, I love, she's one of my heroes.
Yeah, just one of the, there's not a lot of surly older women out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And she just always literally destroyed it. She was so good at.
Yeah, she was so good. I mean, I know, you know, obviously script, you know, she's reading lines, it's edited. But just like the wit that she used to have on Golden Girls, I mean, it was just like, you're fucking amazing.
Yeah, Bea Arthur's great.
And clearly the best of the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
No offense, people love Betty White too much.
She
was the worst part
friendly.
Of the show. Yeah, she's great. I'm sure she's
so
wonderful.
She's just so sweet. You're like, we love her.
Yeah, but the three others were way
Rue
funnier.
Rue McClanahan.
Gold.
Solid gold.
Yeah.
Seemed like a real whore
in all
the right
ways.
It
seemed like they were like, when they wrote the part, they were like, we know who to get.
Yeah.
Call Rue.
Estelle Getty.
Yeah.
Estelle Getty's great.
She was. A lot of, you know, I don't think we're allowed as grown men to admit how great Golden Girls was, but it was a fantastic
show. Used to watch it every day after school. And the guy, and I'm not going to know his name, but the guy who played her ex-husband, Stan, that guy was amazing. Mm-hmm. That guy was so good.
And then they had the spinoff, Empty Nest.
Yeah, not
as
not
good,
bad.
But it had Joe Isuzu in it. And that guy, I don't know how he didn't get more work.
Oh, he was that the neighbor?
Yeah,
that, yeah, was that the, guy was good.
Kind of creepy.
Dude, that was such a thing, man. The neighbor, the sitcom neighbor.
Mm-hmm. I would have been so happy to have gotten sitcom neighbor.
Isn't it? That's the dream gig, man. I was looking, you know, waiting for you guys. I was waiting or looking at the names because I love looking at it. And Jim J. Bullock is on there from Too Close for Comfort. Is that right?
I think that's right.
He was hilarious.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I knew he did stand up, but I've never seen it. I'd love to try and find
that. I think he's one of those guys that probably stopped once he started having television success.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dudes in the 80s and 90s that were really into comedy until they no longer needed to be into comedy.
Yeah. But some people, I mean, one, who would you, if you could make it happen, of that kind of comic, who would you want to most come back and do it? I'm talking like Eddie Murphy, Jim Carrey, like these.
Man, that's tough. Those two guys would both be entertaining to see, I think. Jim Carrey's an odd dude at this point. Mm-hmm. I remember asking him when he was here, right when they started production on I'm Dying Up Here, whatever it was, the Showtime thing. And he was hanging out a couple nights, and I said, you ever miss doing comedy? He goes, absolutely not. And I was just like, really? You don't miss it at all? He's like, no. I get everything I need from doing other creative things. And I'm just like, wow, that's crazy. I feel like I would miss it, but
then... You would think, right? Because, you know, when I go spells without doing anything in front of an audience, I get like, you get depressed. You get like, you're like, oh, I fucking need this. And those guys have, I'm not even a hundredth or a thousandth of what they have
achieved,
but all, just experienced, you know? I'm always kind of amazed by what we were watching. My wife and I were watching the Tina Turner documentary, which is pretty good. Have you seen it? Yeah, I recommend it. And they have a lot of good concert footage of her. And we were just watching it, and I was just like really trying to focus on just her being on stage. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, what she's doing is so like, dancing the way, when she was younger, the way she used to dance and singing, and it's so high energy.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful, and she's doing it, and that's 30 seconds of her life. And I was like, that 30 seconds is better than every second I've had on Earth. And that was just, like, another thing.
Listen, we can't all be Tina Turner.
Well, sure, I know, but
performing.
That's... Performing. I know, but that's, I mean...
I mean, that's her at her best.
Yeah.
I just think of it... What Tina Turner accomplished when she was probably taking a shit was better than a lot of what I've accomplished in my life.
That's what I mean. And
which, if that footage is out there, please send it our way.
It is. It's out there. Everything's out there.
Someone filmed it at some point. Maybe Ike Turner. That's who we need to turn to for the real tapes. Well, I'm going to bring Sarah on. We're going to ask.
Absolutely.
We're going to ask you some more questions. She's going to delve into more of the things that I missed out on because my brain doesn't work very well.
Okay, gotcha.
But we'll be right back.
Okay.
Thanks. Say hi to everyday people. Welcome back, guys. Sarah's here.
Yeah, I'm here to commiserate in the diabetes talk.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Rick Ingram Talks Diabetes.
I think as a diabetic, I should do my own food restaurant book where I just go, nothing I can order there. And it's just me being grumpy because I can't order the best thing at most restaurants.
Oh, so you're like a vegan but for sugar. You're like how
correct.
Angry vegans are at restaurants. We're like, they don't have any vegan options.
Yeah, I would never even consider hanging out with a vegan person because of that kind of mentality. But yeah, when people are like, oh yeah, someone posted something once. I like posted a picture of a tri-tip steak I made and someone left this long comment about how an animal was murdered and something. I'm just like, block.
Yeah.
Don't need to hear it. It's a Facebook post.
Well, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask Mike was what you talked about the best restaurant that you like. Can you talk about the worst?
The worst? I'll tell you the one I'm most disappointed in.
Okay.
It's La Brea Bakery.
Oh.
On La Brea.
Yeah.
I've seen their bread at various stores.
Yeah. Lots of stores.
Yeah.
They, that used to be like, the hottest place in town, like, you know, two decades ago, right? Nancy Silverton started it. She's terrific, a true legend. And then she left, and I don't know who runs it now, but every time we go there, because we live pretty close there, our order is wrong. The staff is rude. They have confusing. They essentially have two lines, mm-hmm. like where they both start. So people are constantly like,
don't know which line.
Don't know where to go.
You wait, and then
it you means feel like you're in Europe. You're like, yeah. No one knows how to do lines here.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's very much like that, and it's that place. Yeah, it's been disappointing, and it's right next to République, which is
amazing. Yeah.
And we're there all the time. And
is that how you pronounce it?
I think so, yeah.
Republic. So
it's very French.
I always just called it Republic.
That's what I would.
But it has a Q-U-E.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Republic.
That place is great. It has the best breakfast dish, yeah. I think, which is this like salmon and dill on and an egg on a latke pancake, you know?
Oh.
It's really terrific. Mm. But that's what La Brea Bakery used to be. Mm-hmm. And now, like, Republic has a line out the, you know, down the block and no line at La Brea Bakery.
Well, probably because of your book.
Probably.
Yep. I like to think you took them down and they deserved every
I wonder
every
if I could write
said.
A guide that is just negative reviews.
That's what I'm thinking of. I'm just, if I worked in restaurants for so long that I would never be able to write a book where I was just talking about how shitty each restaurant was. But then the other part of me is like, you could do it. You could do
I think
it would
be more entertaining to read just like all the worst things about a restaurant. Even if it's good, you could just be like, I didn't like the way the guy in the bathroom looked at me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's a gentleman with a very lazy eye who was not my server, but it was distracting while I tried to eat my Reuben.
But that's the problem with Yelp, which is like if you look at any sort of bad review of Yelp, it's never about the restaurant or the food.
Yeah.
It's always about parking. They're always like, we didn't know where to park. And it's like, well, that's a bad review on the city or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I had a friend who passed away at the beginning of COVID. So it was like a couple months into lockdown. And when he died, he lived in like Arlington, Texas. And so a friend of mine hit me up and just said, hey, just so you know, Kurt died. And then someone was like, basically everyone got on Facebook and started sharing stories. And someone was like, I hope everyone knows about his Yelp reviews. And I clicked on it just being like, what? And this dude had Yelp reviewed every place he had ever been for years. And he lived in L.A. for like 3 or 4 years. So I started going through them, and it was the best. It was literally just like...
The Holocaust Museum.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff he complained about at different places, I was just dying. Like, he spent so much time. Of his angry life, writing Yelp reviews about the bathroom cleanliness of a Carl's Jr. deep in the valley. And I'm just like, what? Why did you think the bathroom was going to be anything?
It's insanity.
Yeah.
I do this movie podcast called Cable Boys, and whatever movie we're talking about, we always find the Amazon review a person has left, because it's always a one star. It's always one star.
Yeah,
and they'll say how terrible it is, and then we find. Where they gave a 5-star review. And so it'll be like, you know, Shawshank Redemption, 1 star, like bad acting or something stupid like that. And then they'll give 5 stars to like Jägermeister bandanas. Or
Howard
something.
The Duck.
Yeah.
Oh, Jägermeister.
Yeah, like,
oh,
no, we always do like products.
Oh,
like
products.
Because that's what's really crazy is that people leave product reviews, like for trash bags, we've heard these are really strong. It's like, what is going on in your life that you feel like you have to do this?
That's what I always amazed me about. Because I was reading through these things and I could picture him saying it in his voice, and like so many of them, I'm just like, this is beautiful because it is.
Yeah.
This is truly like getting to hang out with him again.
Yeah,
because that's you'd go see him and it'd be like, hey, what's up, Kurt? And he'd be like, dude. You know that place, huh? Like, what is it? It's a hand car wash.
Yeah, the supposed to wash at the gas station.
Yeah, you're just like, what? Sushi at the AMPM in like I forget where it was, Little Saigon or something. I'm just like, why did you get sushi at a gas station? I was hungry and I had to get gas. It's like, okay. No.
It's called a convenience store because it's convenient.
Why are you reviewing it?
Have you ever left a bad review, Rick?
I've never reviewed anything.
Ever?
Ever.
That can't be true.
I've never, I mean, you know, I've insulted people to their face because I don't care for them on social media. But I've never, like, had a bad sandwich and been like, I'm going straight to the internet for this.
Well, I wonder how many bad reviews we'll get on this podcast.
I hope we get a lot.
I know.
That's really the goal. If you're not upsetting people, you're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. You need that controversy.
What about the worst state fair band you've ever seen, Mike? Because you talked about the best.
I'm trying to think, what is a bad one?
Was that Spin Doctors you said was the best?
That was the best, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were still peak.
Peak.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever you can get a band that you know at the fair, you're like, oh, like I remember seeing the Indigo Girls at the fair, and I was like, yeah, like 10 years after I had seen them originally in Atlanta, at, like, you know, in their hometown.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw, it wasn't a state fair, but I saw some bands at their peak, and it was one of the worst shows I ever saw. And I just remember being like, I can't believe that this is, it was a Fastball, Marcy Playground, Everclear. And I like Everclear was the headlining act, and it was whatever their album was.
That's a real Mary Fuck Kill.
Yeah.
Which one was the worst one?
I want to say Fastball was probably the worst. I mean, it's tough. Marcy Playground was pretty bad, too.
I saw them, and he passed out on stage. He fell asleep.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Was he a heroin guy? Is that what?
I would guess.
I remember seeing, I always go see the Counting Crows.
But
they were playing with Toad the Wet Sprocket, and I was like, I'm not gonna eat. I don't even want to show up early because I don't want to see them. And then of course we ended up getting there early, and I knew every song. I was like, oh, they're really good.
They had a great cover of a Kiss song
on
this compilation that came out in like 93.
Oh, interesting.
They did Rock and Roll All Night. They did like a slowed version. Actually, last week was 20 years ago that I saw in the same week the best concert and the worst concert I've ever seen.
What's the combo? What?
So it was November, first week in November 2001.
Mm-hmm. Things were a little iffy in America.
A little iffy.
People were feeling a little bit sad.
The first one that I saw was Bob Dylan. So he came into, I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan. And I thought, oh my God, what's... You know, I'm like, 9/11 just happened. So I'm like, what's he going to like say? Is he going to say anything? Is he going to play Masters of
Warp? What's he going to mumble?
Yeah. Yeah. Is he going to play Masters of Warp? That's exactly what he did. We showed up. We were so excited. The lights come down. And this old man in an all-white Colonel Sanders suit comes out with his jug band. And he shits on every song he ever recorded. It's all just like, I couldn't understand any of it. It was all just, eh, woo, wee, woo, woo. I had to like cock my ear. I'm like, what song is this? He'd be like, eh, woo, Tangled Up in Blue. I was like, oh, great. My favorite one.
Wow. Yeah, perfect.
And like, you could see everyone's face, like the disappointment, like how much they spent and stuff, you know,
on
dinner and parking. And so it was really a bummer. And then 2 days later, I snagged tickets to see Britney Spears. And it was the best show I've ever seen.
So entertaining.
She, first of all, me and my buddies were the only males of this age there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all moms and they're prepubescent girls who are all provocatively dressed.
Sure.
When we get our seats, the lights dim. I think O-Town opened for her, but nobody was paying any attention. When they were done, the lights dimmed. And what I would say was like a prepubescent girl scream just started. And every girl was just like, yay! And that never stopped. That was just like, yay! She
kept it going.
So she came out. She lip-synced like every song. Mm-hmm. Costume change after every song. And then midway through the show, they did you hear a piano playing. And the dancers all scatter. And the lights dim. And she went to the middle stage. And a piano guy came up on a riser, and she sat down next to him and went, hey, y'all, some crazy stuff's happening in the world today. And for 10 minutes, talked about 9/11, and the war in Iraq.
Finally. The voice America needed to hear.
The whole time, those girls are still going, yay! She goes for 10 minutes, finally wraps it up, her CIA speech. The piano player goes back down on the riser, and they go into, oops, I did it again.
No, I was going to say, I hope they didn't do.
And I was like, this is the best show I've ever seen in my life.
Okay, so listen, y'all, then I'm going to talk a little bit about America for a little bit, what it means to me, and then we'll go straight into the hits.
She was like, you know, President Bush knows what he's doing, so we just have to support him and stuff.
Love it.
I was like, this is fucking amazing that I'm getting to watch this.
Yeah. I saw Pearl Jam a couple times in the 90s, and they were great. Mm-hmm. And so someone offered me tickets to see them in probably 2003 or 4, something like that. And so we went, and the tickets were pretty terrible, but they were free, so I didn't care, I guess. And a couple songs in, he's like, we're going to bring someone out to play some songs with us. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be sick. It's going to be like Chris Cornell or something. And he's like, give it up for Tim Robbins. And I'm like, did you say Tim Robbins? And sure enough, Andy Dufresne walks out. And I'm just like, what the fuck is Tim Robbins doing here? And he's like, we rewrote some old war songs from Vietnam. And I'm like, this isn't happening, is it? And then Tim Robbins sang some songs that he and Eddie Vedder rewrote. It was supposed to be about Vietnam that are now about the war in Iraq. And it was awful. It was like a solid 15 minutes of me being like, I can't even watch Shawshank again. I'm with that guy who said one star for this movie after watching him sing.
You know that song, those songs that they reworked, right? Tim Robbins and Eddie Vedder were probably like, this is gonna fucking work, right?
Yeah.
Didn't change the mind of one person.
No.
But that Britney Spears speech in front of all those girls who 20 years later are now voting.
Yeah.
That's real reach. That's real influence.
That's the connection that people really
You don't get them with, like, we're going to rewrite these songs, man, you know?
Yeah.
No, you get them with pop music and get the lights flashing.
Get the piano playing.
Get them young when they're you know, they don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And just
whatever
lay the
America
seed.
Whatever America does, it's the right thing, y'all.
Britney.
That was the speech.
Playing the long game.
Yeah, she's smart. She knew. She said, I'm going to lock myself up for a couple decades, and then I'm going to come back strong.
Run for office.
Yeah, she's got her plan all worked out. The locust has emerged from their 17-year slumber, if you will.
All right. Well, I mean, I just wanted a good drinking story from Louisiana, if you had a one that you can remember. From New Orleans.
So there was this great bar that's no longer down there called the Shim Sham Club.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's called the Three Clubs. Pretty good, but not as good as the Shim Sham. And the Shim Sham was an old movie theater that they converted into really a bar dance club. So like the lobby of the movie theater was the bar. And then where the seats would have been, they made a stage and you could dance in there. But I always hung upstairs in the secret bar, which was like the projection room, where they sold like 25-cent beers, and they would have like old pornos showing on like a small TV and stuff. And it never closes.
A little character.
Yeah. And like it's all that. And there's no air conditioning, so everyone's cramped in there, and we're just sweating and drinking and doing coke and just really good times.
Yeah. The coke explains the, like, we should have some porn playing.
We should have some porn playing. I just watched a guy, like, you know, fuck another guy on the hood of a Corvette. I was like,
classic.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Americana. I hope there's a story. This is not doing anything for me sexually, but, you know. So they were closing, so we went to, like, the last night, right? And I did a bunch of ecstasy. And at that time, I had been playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto, Vice City.
Okay.
So when, I mean, I was just really high. And when we got there, I couldn't go up into the projection booth because it was too crowded. So I had to go into the dance club, which I'm not great in dance clubs, you know, not on ecstasy and other stuff.
Yeah, rightly so.
But on this, I was just like really freaking out. And they all looked like the dancers in Grand Theft Auto, like when you went to the club.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my God, what if someone comes in here and just starts shooting? Like I was having a meltdown. That's a good story. It's like, no, I mean, like that was a fun time.
Oh, okay, that's good. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, I think anything on ecstasy has a tendency to be a better evening.
I called, I was in Vegas once on ecstasy, and I was down in the sports book with a buddy, and he was betting on sports. And it was when Derek Jeter was coming up on hitting his 3,000th hit, so you could bet on it.
Right.
And it's like, you know, 2-1 odds or a single, whatever. And I think 100-1 was a home run. And I was just kind of looking at it, and I pointed it to my friend. I was like, put everything on home run. And he was like, really? I was like, yeah, do it. So he walked away, and I thought, oh, that's what he did. 2 days later, Derek Jeter hit a home run for his 3,000th hit. And I immediately called this guy. I was like, we just made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I didn't really place that bet.
Hey, I don't trust you at all.
I was like, what do you do? If somebody like on drugs is like, hey, make this bet, that's you when it. You do it. Yeah. Not when like you're sober.
Yeah, next, your brain was working next level. Yeah, it already saw
I already saw
happen.
The hit. Yeah, yeah. I was like,
it makes perfect sense.
Dude, I'm 2 days away, so just do this for me.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Man. Well,
I hope you are no longer friends with that loser.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Okay, that's all I have.
Do you have things you want to promote, social media, the book?
Well, I don't get any money anymore off the book, so that's fine. Then I can write another one. No, just this movie podcast called Cable Boys.
Cool.
It's pretty fun. I think people will like it. We have guests on a lot, and I would love to have both of you send that invitation. But are there movies that you watched, like, way too young? We talk about inappropriate movies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
My wife loves telling me about how her dad let her watch The Shining when she was 6.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, a great example.
And she's like, and, you know, it's still to this day one of the best movies. And I'm like, yeah, but I genuinely fear that you might murder me in my sleep every night. And it could have something to do with, you know, maybe watching The Shining as a 6-year-old, but...
I'm glad you guys didn't have twins.
God, me too. The terror. All right. Well, thank you for being on, man.
Yeah, thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it
Mike
a lot.
Post.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
You were awesome.
Post. The real Greek.
Yeah, that's right.
The undercover Hungarian. Polak.
People don't use it. I wish we would go back to
Polak.
Yeah, like those kind of ethnic slurs, yeah. Like that Polak, that WAP.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's bring those back.
Look, I'm doing all I can. You know? I'm putting it out there. I'm trying to get canceled so that we can get a little buzz. So, all right, well, keep listening. Thanks for being here. We got a live show December 8th in the Belly Room. Tickets, you can get them on the Comedy Store website. If you think you're entertaining, you have friends that you think are entertaining, bring them to the show. And if you have friends that are real piles of shit and you just want to see them get ruined, bring that person. Invite your boss. Let's get people here that we can really embarrass. So,
Rick gets extra mean in the live shows. He's pretty tame in these.
I'm nice. When I'm talking to someone, I'm like, this is a good person. When there's encouragement coming from the crowd, I'm like, let's destroy someone together. So, come out. Have fun. It'll be a good time. Thanks, guys.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM IngramPod on Twitter. That's IngraHam Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye to everyday people.
Special thanks to the Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.